Greetings to Talmidim, alumni, and other people who listen into the Divrei Torah of our Lev Arye website. This week, we have a special opportunity to fulfill a Torah obligation to read from the Torah. Generally speaking, we read the Torah portion of the week. It's a rabbinic mitzvah that was initiated by Ezra Sofer. Inaugurated during the beginning of the Second Temple period. But according to all authorities, reading the mitzvah of destroying Amalek is a Torah obligation. Within the mitzvah, it's understood that we read about the brazen plot of Amalek to battle Bnei Yisrael as they came out of Egypt, and we're instructed to remember what they did and not forget their evil actions. During the conclusion of the battle with Amalek, Hashem commands Moshe Rabbeinu to write down this episode and to command Yeshua, who eventually lead Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, to remember what Amalek did. And God took an oath that there is to be a war with Amalek from generation to generation. What is the significance of this mitzvah? As I said, the mitzvah is to remember Amalek's actions, and we enjoin not to forget. According to all authorities, the basic mitzvah is to remember what occurred and to instill within ourselves the need to destroy Amalek. And using the term schira, to remember, our sages understand that the proper application of remembering is through reading it from the Sefer Torah. It's an interesting thing. On Simchas Torah, we celebrate the accomplishment of reading through the written law over the course of the year. On Shavuos, we celebrate the giving of the Torah in Har Sinai. Yet, one of the few common opportunities of filling the mitzvah of reading from the Torah is Parsha Zohar. There are other mitzvahs in the Torah that require reading a Parsha. Tosfos and Brachos addresses that at the beginning of the second parak of Brachos. But the most practical and common mitzvah of reading from the Torah is Parsha Zohar. Rashi explains the audacity of Amalek was the fact that when we read in the Shiras Hayam, Oz Yashir, the song that Moshe and Bnei Yisrael sang over the utter defeat and drowning of the Egyptian army in the Reed Sea. Pesukim describe the utter fear that that great a miracle affected itself upon the neighbors of Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, people living in Canaan, people living in adjacent areas. Pesukim state, Shama Amun Yigazum, people hear about it and they're terrified. Chil Ha'achaz Yoishvei Peloshes, and utter fear took hold of the people dwelling in the Philistine area, which is the coast, the western coast of Eretz Yisrael, and goes up to an area not far from Yerushalayim, area by Telstone, Kiryas Yarim. Az Nivhal Lufi Adam Ele Moyam Yosem Lorad. The chieftains of Edom were terrified. The heroes of Moab were entangled by absolute fear. Now Maigo Koyeshri Canaan. All the inhabitants of Canaan melted. Then the Pasuk states, Tipolayim Emos Vafachad Vikos Rakakin Vukhovin. Should Paul fall upon them, utter fear, the great expression of God's might against his enemies, the Egyptians. They will be silenced like stone. Ad Yavram Chal Hashem, until your people, Hashem, will pass over into Eretz Yisrael. Ad Yavram Zuknisa. Until the people who you've taken possession of and created have crossed over into Eretz Yisrael by passing over the Yarden. So Moloch says, what's the big deal? So the Reed Sea split, the Egyptians were drowned. So it was some tsunami that came at the right time, the right place, and destroyed them. These people, bunch of idiots. The Jews, Ben Israel just came out of Egypt. They're not armed properly. We'll show the world there's nothing to be afraid of. And they go ahead and they fight. And the Torah emphasizes in Parsha Zachar, they didn't fear God. Now you ask yourself, is this what we're emphasizing, that some Nazi doesn't fear God? It would seem he does some more bestial thing to make an issue of. What point are we trying to get across, that the essence of a Moloch is a lack of fear of God? Our father, Abraham, was commanded to bring his son Yitzchak, put him on an altar, and he had understood that he was to sacrifice him to fulfill a commandment of God. As he was about to slaughter his son, an angel of God came and said to stop and not to inflict any wound or harm to Yitzchak. Our sages explain, Abraham questioned this whole episode. God commanded him, according to his understanding, to sacrifice his beloved son Yitzchak. Yet God had said earlier that his true seed and true future would come from Yitzchak. And now he comes and says, don't sacrifice Yitzchak, leave him alone. How is this all understood? So God explains, I wanted you just to see that you're prepared to sacrifice him, to put him on the altar, but not to actually physically sacrifice him. He wanted to see Avram's total commitment to face the challenge and succeed. Then the Pesukim describe how he found a ram entangled in a bush nearby, and he sacrificed that ram in lieu of his son. And our sages explain, as he was processing the offering, and the main service in offering a sacrifice is slaughtering the animal, receiving its blood in a holy vessel, and then throwing the blood upon the altar and burning the particular fats that are burned on an altar when you offer a sacrifice. This having to be a burnt offering, so the whole, all of its flesh was burnt. Avram's motivation and intention and thoughts throughout this service was, when I slaughter this animal, it's as if I slaughtered my son. When I receive the blood, as if I received the blood of my son, then I sprinkle it on the altar. I'm burning this animal, the sacrifice. I'm burning this animal in lieu of my son. I would have burnt my son. And we say the ashes of Yitzhak are constantly in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if the reality of this offering was Yitzhak. Second time, the angel of Hashem appears to Avram and it says, now I appreciate that you are a God-fearing person. So of all of the commitment of Avram Avinu, the apex of his success or his praise is he fears God. That means, with all the questions he had in mind about doing this action, he stymied those doubts, whether they're the doubts of how could he sacrifice his son if God promised him that his son is his future, if God is using him as the ambassador to the world, that human sacrifice is a abomination, if when he was prepared to do God's will, the Malach tells him, no, don't harm your son, leave him alone. He accepts that. But being confused, he would like clarification. And when it's clear to him what God's motives were, and he saw the opportunity of bringing an animal sacrifice and move his son, all of his love and fear of God were implanted in that service. The ultimate test, the ultimate success of fearing God, as opposed to a Moloch. A Moloch says, there is a God that we have to fear. This is a miracle. The Bnei Yisrael are something, some people to be concerned over. We'll show the world at large that we can challenge them in the battle. And there were times within the battle that they had the upper hand. And our sages do say that they were able to inflict harm upon those who feared, who were less fearful of God as others, those who were shall we say, spiritually, in the tail end of Bnei Israel, thereby challenging God's commitment and will to have Bnei Israel settle Eretz Israel and eventually by building the Beis HaMikdash and being in their promised land, fulfill the promise to our forefathers, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, and be the proper Or LaGoyim, light to the world. When the two spies were sent by Yeshua to check out Yericho, spoke with Rachav, who was the innkeeper in Yericho, who had hid them and helped them lodge in Yericho, she described how the people in Canaan were disillusioned, were in utter fear of the future conquest of Bnei Israel, Eretz Israel. So the Michtamiel asks, so if their hearts melted, why did you have 31 kings fight to the bitter end in the various battles that Yeshua and Bnei Israel had in conquering Eretz Israel? They may have outwardly had fear, but their fear wasn't deep enough to realize that it was pointless to fight HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his messengers, the Bnei Israel. They refused to either leave the country, convert, and instead they took the way of battle. This, I believe, was the message they got from Amalek. Don't worry about God. Things will work out. Things are all by chance. In the right time, right place, anything goes. What is this constant requirement to remember? When Rosh Hashiva B'chaim Yishmael Levitz Zatzal said that Amalek represents compromise, rationalization. Everyone within himself rationalizes the mistakes, spiritual mistakes he makes. We have to confront the truth. And if there's any question of monetary ethics, spiritual ethics, relationships between a fellow Jew, a fellow neighbor, they're questionable. When I allow myself to speak Lashon Hara, when I allow myself not to give as much charity, support yeshivas, etc. Instead, I have my Caribbean vacation or some other necessity, a new car, etc. How I allow myself to some way abuse my position as being head of the family in relation to my wife, to my family, etc. Not honor Talmidei Chacham properly. Whatever excuses people come up with, whatever rationalizations people come up, the source of that is Amalek. Within the name Amalek is Amkal, a light people. Do it! If it feels good, do it. So God says that my throne is incomplete and my name is incomplete as long as Amalek exists. There's an obstacle in serving God and learning His Torah properly as long as Amalek exists. The significance of the name of Hashem, Ka, Yud-Kei, half of his name, incomplete, case. Instead of kisei, it says case. And in the parsha that we read, Ata Tetzave, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned at all. And the first mitzvah, the parsha describes how they should take pure olive oil by which they will light the candelabra and the Beis HaMikdash, initiating the introducing the sanctification of Aaron and his sons as the Kohanim, the priests of Israel, Aaron being the high priest, before actually the mitzvah investing Aaron and his sons to be the Kohanim. As I said before, Shmos, a Sefer Shmos, deals a lot with names. We start with names. In the middle, we're warned about not expressing God's name in vain. And then we conclude with the names of the Shvatim on the high priest's breastplate, Kodesh Mishpat. Here, in this parsha, Moshe's name is not mentioned. It's the only time after Moshe is born and his name is not mentioned. And we talk about Shemen. Tov Shem, Mishemen Tov. As I said before, name is a placement, an application. Oil has the power of giving light, power of embellishing, of giving a certain shine. People used to use oil as an ointment. And, of course, it's used to anoint kings and high priests and holy vessels. A Molech has no place in this world. Shmuel HaNavi, according to some Mefarshim, had a special commandment to tell Shaul, the first king of Israel, to utterly destroy Molech. Men, women, children, babies, sheep, everything they own should be totally destroyed. Those that say the main mitzvah is destroy all the humankind, possessions, their assets are not necessarily applicable here. But the first opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah when the Bnei Israel had a king, Shmuel's commandment through prophecy was that they should be totally destroyed. Nothing should be left over. Again, my opinion in the situation was there was a great fear of rationalizing, of showing pity in the wrong place. Therefore, the message had to be given over. There shouldn't be any souvenir, nothing left over from Molech. It has to be totally destroyed, A to Z. We can't say that this chair, this ox, this table, was found in the Smithsonian that belonged to the Amalek people. No memory at all. As long as such a cynical existence can have some type of life, even an inanimate life, it gives credence to the idea, God forbid, there's no God in the world and there's no divine providence. And Klal Yisrael has no station in this world. When the Bnei Yisrael succumbed to the sin of the golden calf, and God considered destroying them, Moshe Rabbeinu beseeched God to leave them be, and if he does not accept his prayers, please erase me from your scroll, from your book. Kodesh Baruch Hu responded, I will only erase those who have sinned. Being that a righteous person's wish or command to some extent is fulfilled, those who exegize and explain, the Chumash say that that's why in the Atatzava we do not find Moshe's name mentioned. At the same time, it's a special relationship, a personal relationship. God is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, you. It's a direct connection. And the greatest commemoration of Moshe's name is the continued existence of Klal Yisrael, that he is Moshe Rabbeinu, he's our teacher, he is the one who's directing us through all eternity. Let's ask of God that he purify our hearts to serve him in truth, that we should merit the utter destruction of Amalek, and thereby bring the absolute revelation of God's glory to the whole world, speedily in our time.